we're still waiting to find my gavel, which seems to catch everybody's attention better than me rattling on. So we're going to go ahead and begin the meeting now. Thank you for coming to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular study session for September 18th, 2018. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a... Hanford, Rasmussen, Davis, and Camp.
Thank you. And Councilmember Rasmussen, will you please lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please note for the record that we heard from Councilmember Cutaback last week or the week before indicating that she would not be here this evening. I also received a message from Councilmember Gamble earlier this evening indicating that he would not be able to make it this evening. So unless there's objection, we'll go ahead and consider the two as excused absences. We're going to go ahead and move on to the first item on our agenda this evening, and that is under announcements and presentations. This is AB 18-193. Presentation, Rotary Club of Monroe, canine program donation. Interim Chief Irving. Interim Deputy Chief Irving. Yeah, you did. Oh, that's right.
Good evening, everyone. It is my pleasure tonight to bring up Rick Carlson from the Rotary. He's going to make a presentation to our city and department for a program that's very important to us. So, Rick, can you come on board?
So, this all started out, the police department puts on a really cool program, the Citizens Academy. And I actually went to it like 20-some years ago, but then was encouraged to do it again this last year. And a number of Rotarians were there, and then there's a lot of other citizens and stuff that are there. And one of the things that they do in that academy is a demonstration of the canine. It's usually the tracking dog that they do because he's the one that's more aggressive and, you know, is more exciting to watch than the drug-sniffing dogs and stuff. But the canine was down. He had a terminal illness, and that's how we became aware of it. And Nuke was actually a dog that Rotary helped purchase some years ago. And so some of us that were there and heard about that said, well, what can we do to help? And so some of the people, what's cool, really cool about this is that Rotarians are used to doing this kind of stuff, and a number of them got involved. But graduates from that Citizens Academy also got involved. And then some citizens just out of the blue that heard about it got involved. And by the time we were done with this, or we're still not done with it, but by the time it got rolling, we got donations. The Whidbey Island Kennel Club gave us $5,000 to support the canine program here. My Only Kennels, substantial donations, Rotary substantial donations. We put collection jars around town. We did the 50-50 event at Evergreen Speedway. We put on a dog fun run walk this summer. There was a number of different things that we did, and the plan, we ended up forming a group called the Monroe Community Canine Support, and the idea was to raise money to cover the costs of obtaining a new tracking dog, but then also to try to continue this and to provide funds maybe on a yearly basis to help support the canine program. So that's what we're doing, and we're doing it under the umbrella of Rotary, which is great. But it's cool because it involves other citizens and people that have no other connection but this to the community. And it's kind of really encouraging how many people wanted to be a part of this and wanted to help support. So our goal was to provide initial funds to pay for the acquisition of a new canine, and then to hopefully provide support, which Rotary has already pledged to do on an annual basis. And then we'll still continue to put on the events. So with that, we have a check from Rotary and our group to the City of Monroe to be used, hopefully earmarked for the canine program, for $10,000.
I just want to say that this money couldn't come at a better time, that we are moving forward with trying to replace our tracking canine, so this is very much appreciated. That's one of the great things about living in Monroe, is that we have such a supportive community, and everyone that put money forth for this project, I think it's amazing. So thank you so much for that, and if we could, I would love to get everybody up here that's here on behalf of this to take a picture with the check. If we could, please.
Move the podium.
What do you
think?
Councilmember Rasmussen. Thank you. Hey, Rick, before you go, alright, I'll just say for the record, I actually just want to, Rick, congratulate you and the Monroe Rotary Group, and thank you for your leadership in this. I mean, being on council and getting to talk with our officers, we know how valuable that the canine program is for our police department, and under your leadership and with the support of the entire Rotary Group to take this on, I just want to personally thank you for that and everything you've done and bring this, help support the program for us. So thank you very much.
It was encouraging to me to see how many people in the community appreciate the police department, because I know they don't get that all the time, but how much they appreciate all of what the police do, the sacrifices they make, the risks that they take on our behalf, and just so you know, there's a lot of people that feel good about the police and mm-hmm. feel good about what they do, and we're just falling all over themselves to try to be involved and help, so.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Did somebody else want to speak?
I guess not.
Okay. Mr. Carlson, on behalf of the community, on behalf of the city and our police department, thank you very much. And thank you very much to the Rotary for pulling all of this together. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is announcements and presentation on number two. This is AB 18194, presentation, Monroe YMCA. Ms. Price. Yes, we'll go ahead and activate that. Podium. It's called podium, right? Staff.
Just making a note of that.
There we go.
You're on. Go
okay,
ahead.
Thank you. I'm a little nervous. I think it might be the three monitors, but it looks pretty cool in here.
There aren't any cameras, so.
What's that?
There aren't any cameras.
Okay, good. I feel better then. Thank you. So I wanted to start by thanking the council for partnering with our YMCA and providing the community with the city resident YMCA membership. And honoring the city's original agreement from many, many years ago, by providing a family's access to a pool in our community, and that, you know, went over a span of time where we had an economic recession, but it's been honored, and I just want to say thank you, and that shows a high level of integrity and character, and we're doing good work together. So not only is it important to lead a healthy and active lifestyle, which you can do at the YMCA, but recent data shows that drowning is the leading cause of death in ages 0 to 14, and the Monroe Y is committed to reducing incidents of drowning, therefore reducing the devastating effects of losing a loved one. So I appreciate your partnership in this effort. Some data just to share with you. So the first term of our partnership in the city membership went for 6 months from January to June, and we issued 500 city membership cards. And currently in the second term, we're at about 475. We also served within that group, 117 families totally were served, and 171 school-aged children were served. We had 67 participants from that group of individuals who participated in youth programming. They received a discount or preferred member pricing through the program and participated in youth programs like swimming lessons, youth sports, and child care. Some of the marketing efforts that the Y did to make sure as many people heard about this city benefit was ads on the wall at the Galaxy movie theater. You might have gone to the movies and seen the ad. And we also did our reader board, which sits on Firelands Boulevard, and you can see it from both directions. We did Facebook posts. If you're familiar with Facebook, you can do boosts. Boosts are paid advertisements that go out to a certain demographic, and we had 159 shares and comments, and then organic reaches are unpaid, and we had over 200 shares and likes. We had reached over 8,000 individuals on Facebook. We visited three PTA meetings, including the Parent Hub, to share the information. We had an article in the Monroe Monitor, and we did the school Peachtree newsletter that goes out on email. We also did flyers at our childcare sites to spread the word, encouraging people to share with their neighbors. We did class announcements. We had it in our newsletter and sent out emails to our staff, again, to share with their friends, family, and neighbors. And we run a chamber website as well as three separate mailings through every door direct mail, reaching over 3,000 residents. So just a little bit of the effort that we did to really make sure that as many people knew about the city membership. So just to kind of wrap that up, before I introduce Craig, who's going to talk a little bit about kind of our plan moving forward, I've got three testimonies that I'd like to share with you. The first one is from Mark and Julia Canaday. And their testimony says, we have found Monroe to be an expensive city to live in. Utilities cost more here than they did in Redmond, and it is just the two of us in our household. We feel the city membership is a nice benefit for the community members who might not be able to pay for a membership to get time to play in the pool. Our second testimony comes from Crystal and Nick Torres. We are a single-income family that homeschools. This has been a good way to get physical activity as a family and for school. We now do swimming lessons at the Monroe Y instead of driving to Everett, and it's been great. And then the last testimony I'd like to share with you is from Erin Klang. I'm a stay-at-home mother of four from ages 4 to 9. I grew up in California where everybody has a backyard swimming pool. I noticed that so many adults in Washington are not comfortable in the water. I believe this is due to the availability of free swimming experiences for kids. I love that the City of Monroe and the YMCA are doing something about this problem. My kids and I loved to use the YMCA pool once or twice a week in this program. My kids have become stronger swimmers and have had a lot of fun. The staff and lifeguards are super kind and helpful. Thank you to the YMCA and the City of Monroe for giving my kids the gift of swimming and me the peace of mind that they are safe in the water. So I just want to go ahead and thank you again and introduce Craig, who will give you a little bit more information.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us tonight. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Craig Chambers. I am the new executive director. I'll pull it up here so it'll make it a little easier for me. No offense, Tanya. At the Monroe Sky Valley Family YMCA. And I wanted to just take a moment to talk to you folks about what this program could look like potentially in the future. We did submit a request to the city to re-up for another year with this program. While this last year was wildly successful, we were going to serve over 1,000 people in this program this year by the end of it. I think it's also important to try and be better. That's what we strive to do at the YMCA all the time. And for me, one of the biggest things we can do is serve our community, and I think we can do a better job serving our community the next go-around. Right now, we offer the program 3 times a week at very specific times. Families have to make themselves available to come. So for a family that these times don't work, they can't use the city pass and swimmer pool. So in the future, we'd love to offer the city pass to families, but not have any restrictions on the time that they can use the pass, and they can use it whenever they want throughout the week, twice a week. So it allows anybody who is available to come to our YMCA at any time of the day. It's an option for them to do this. So we won't be restricting anybody. I'm absolutely into full inclusivity, and we were not allowing that to be possible for every family that was out there. So that's a great benefit that we would like to offer to the city if we were to partner again in the future. I think that will give everyone an opportunity to actually use our pool, and we'll have full engagement with that. So we just want to come and say thank you one more time and let you know that even though it was wildly successful this last time, in hopes of partnering in the future, we plan on even being better the second time around. So we want to thank you for your support, and we know for a fact from the people that we've heard from in the community that they also appreciate the city of Monroe investing in them as well. So thank you for having us. Am I allowed to ask any questions? Or
I'll go ahead and do that.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Council members, do you have any questions or comments? Councilmember Rasmussen. Let me click with that one. Okay.
Turn the audio off.
No worries.
And then turn on Councilmember Rasmussen.
Turn what off? Oh, podium off, right, one at a time. Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Craig, Tanya, thank you for coming and bringing the information and thank you for putting the testimonies in with the information you shared with council. I think those are spot on with the intent of the agreement and focus on the swimming. I think that's awesome, and it's so incredible to hear. I'm curious, maybe I missed it. Of the memberships that were issued, was there an average attendance data that you had or that you could share?
No, I didn't speak to any attendance.
Okay.
So that's something, Craig might know a little bit more about that.
So that was a little difficult. Also, for us to track is when it's during a specific time, they weren't using some sort of voucher or coupon that was open to our city members during that time. I do know that our pool, with our One Life Guard on,
we can hold 25, we can hold up to 25 swimmers at a time, and then as when we eclipse that number, we have to put another guard on. I know that we did have to staff another guard for these swimming periods of time, so we were above the 25 mark for each session, but we weren't able to track numbers just based off of the fact that it's just an open time. So when we go, if we hopefully can switch to the members coming in twice per week, we would actually be able to capture that for them coming in. So we have approximation numbers, but we're not able to tell breaking down by each member how many times they came.
That's all I had, but thank you again for the partnership and
doing this with the pool.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford, did you have something too?
Yes, thank you. Appreciate your partnership with the Y. Just clarifying, so of the 500 city members, it says it's signed up 334. So are there still openings, or is it, have we met the quota?
Yeah, so when we collected the data originally when we submitted this, because we had to submit it ahead of time, we were at 344, whatever it was. We're actually at 475 now, so we have 25 spaces left for people to sign up. So we actually are much further along at this point in time in that 6-month stretch than we were the last 6 months. So I think a lot of times too, what happened is we kind of had some roadblocks at the start because people thought that we had run out of memberships right away. So we had to educate the community, let them know there's still opportunities to sign up. And then that second time through, we had a waiting list for people to come on. So as soon as that second time relapsed, we signed them up right away. So we kind of had a jump start this session through. So yeah, it was about 25, and today it could be different. That was when we from we pulled this morning. So we could be at 478 for all I know.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Any other comments? All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the update.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is public comments. This is a time set aside for members of the public to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Speakers are afforded 3 minutes to speak to the council. Do we have anybody who signed in? All right. Is there any member of the public that would like to come speak to the City Council this evening? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to council member reports. Are there any council member reports this evening? All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move into staff department reports. Are there any staff or department reports this evening? Okay. Did you say buzz?
Yeah.
Nice. So you would be staff at table.
Yeah, staff at table.
Scott. Mr. Peterson.
Hey. Good evening. Thank you, Council, for having me. Just want to give a quick update on our 191st project. I think the nutshell is nothing super exciting going on. Just want to give you an update that we are working on it, specifically our design consultant, which is Pertit, is working on it. They have today collected topographic surveying of the entire corridor, and it's in the hands of the civil engineer, who is developing the roadway alignment, as well as coming up with some concept alternatives for how this alignment ties into Rainier View Road. As you know, up there between 191st and Rainier View Road, there's a few kind of weird connections there, and this connection here will probably exacerbate it, and so they're looking at ways to maybe improve that intersection as part of this project, or maybe an additional project in the near future. But I tasked them with looking at ways to soften up that connection with the future 191st road extension. We're still working with WashDOT to a couple things. One, general advancement with the lease agreement. Still working with the right-of-way staff and engineering staff on that. We also need to get permits from them in order for our geotechnical engineer to go out and do soil explorations. So working with a large government agency like that, it can be quite cumbersome. But we are getting there, and we're hoping that early October we can poke holes in the soil from the geotech. And actually, I think next week we might be getting some of those alternative designs for the Rainier View connection in-house for us to look at. So it's getting close. This update's a little premature. I haven't really seen anything, you know, physical in my hands, but it's imminent. So we're still on task. At the end of the year, we'll have a 30% design complete, pretty much our concept or preliminary design layout, which I'm sure we'll bring back to discuss with you. And then we'll also have a much better idea of how much this project is tracking towards cost before we negotiate the second and final phase of the design with our consultant. And we anticipate that to occur throughout the rest of 2019. So as a quick wrap-up of the 191st, if you guys have any questions, certainly I'll try and answer them.
Any questions from council? I've got to turn off step. Sorry. And Ms. Knight.
The reason for bringing this back to council was a comment that Mr. Feilberg had made at a previous meeting about a cost increase. And that cost increase had been presented to council back in June, where we had moved, I think, from a $3 million initial cost estimate to a $5 million cost estimate. So can you just talk a little bit about what's driving that $2 million cost increase? At the time that Mr. Feilberg made that comment, I wasn't aware that it wasn't an additional increase on top of the $5 million. But still, I think just having a quick conversation around what are some of the factors driving cost.
You push the button. Sorry, we're getting this down.
Okay, I'm green, so here we go.
All right.
Okay, so the original concept that was presented that we ultimately, the council directed us to move forward with, had about a $2.3 million price tag to it. And then when we went and hired out a consultant, their idea of the cost of the project could be as much as 5.2 million, which is substantially different than what we were thinking. This was also the driver as to why we split their design agreement into phasing. The general goal was pretty much, let's see where the concept is heading. So we have all the studies in our house, we know the terrain, we've done the soil explorations, we've examined the environmental criteria that we'll have to work with. We'll know what your cost will be, we'll know which way this project is tracking. So right now, the general difference is just purely the level of effort that the staff believes and what the consultant believes will take to run this road from one end to the other. There are some additional drivers. There may be a need to get a little bit of Walmart property in case we need to do some massaging at that roundabout to make a better connection to that roundabout, as well as up north, as I mentioned earlier, the Rainy View Road intersection is going to get a little messy, so there might be some additional work up north to try and massage that out a little bit. So those could be potential price increases. Beyond that, it'd be market trends. It's a booming economy. Prices are going up faster than typical. So the market's hot. You know, prices are at a premium. So, but for now, you know, just pushing forward the 30% design. And when we're in December or whatnot, we'll have a better idea of which way this project's going to actually cost. So,
okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. All right, next item on the agenda then, we're still under staff and department reports. Are there any other staff or department reports? I see PD's here, finance. All right, city administrator update, Ms. Knight.
I have a couple of updated items. I will hold on providing information that Councilmember Cutterback had asked regarding Senate Bill 2538 and that impact on the impact fees. So I'll come back at the next meeting and present some more information about that. Long short of it is, it's really focused around the definition of shelter, and that's where that relief on impact fees could happen, and the city would have to pay back any impact fees that it had waived if we want a homeless shelter. There was also a question from Councilmember Camp regarding flag protocol and placing black ribbons on a flag that couldn't be lowered to half staff. What we would recommend is that we come back and look at revising or amending the city's flag protocol. We have an adopted protocol. Currently, we follow federal law, which provides some stability then to staff members who have to go out and take care of our flags. So that's what we would recommend as opposed to just adopting that right off the bat. So we wanted to get some feedback from council about that alternative.
So, yeah, I'd like to follow up with Councilmember Camp on that. Councilmember Camp, did I understand before that you were referring to just this flag right here? Yeah, go for it. I'll loop you in.
I have heard that this was a flag protocol for flags which cannot be taken to half staff, and that's the one I was thinking of. Now, if it's a great effort, if we have a lot of flags, let's see, I don't think the city has any flag out there that can't be brought down to half staff in the city. Am I wrong?
I don't know the flags in the city.
Okay.
I think the concern from the staff perspective was is that currently we follow federal law, and so the protocol that you're proposing is not part of federal law.
Oh, is it?
It is not.
Okay.
It's a standard that the Veterans of Foreign Wars has adopted.
That's fine. We don't. Okay. I didn't know if it was federal or not. I had just heard of it, and I thought it would be appropriate. If we don't want to follow it, that's fine.
It's a council decision, so we could bring it back and have a discussion about it if you'd like. That's the proposal.
You know, I will ask, as far as I know, there's only one veteran on council at this point. Do you have any strong opinions on it, if I could ask you that?
I don't even know what the question is. Putting a black ribbon on this flag when our flags are past staff throughout the city.
I wouldn't have any objections. Like, you might want to ask the VFW.
Okay.
But their thoughts are, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
If this is going to be too involved, I'm not worried about it. I just thought it was a good idea for you to change.
To recognize the half staff flags
right
out in the community, why not?
Okay. If it's a great deal of effort and if there's a lot of staff time involved, I don't want to increase the workload. And I don't know if it's worth council time. to discuss, so we can just let it go.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The second item I have is there was also a question from Councilmember Camp about council members' opportunity to be signed up for the Public Employment Retirement System, or PERS. And so Ms. Hassard and Mr. Worthen both looked into it, and it turns out that council members can individually sign up for PERS if you're interested. It would mean that the employee portion, your portion, would come out of your existing pay, and that the city would be responsible for paying the employer portion, which comes out to be around $16,000 a year for the employer portion. So the question for council then is, if you're interested, we'll bring back additional information for you, you know, with how much it would cost you individually, plus how much it would actually cost the city, and the sheets, the, you know, kind of the enrollment forms if you wanted to sign up. The other option for you is we actually have to bring back together the Salary Commission, and so we could take this issue to the Salary Commission if you're interested in having the Salary Commission weigh in before you make your personal decisions.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough, just a second. Scarborough.
One of the questions that might be asked when you're doing your investigation is, how would that affect those of us already drawing a PERS retirement school district, i.e.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Camp, I think you're up next.
When one of the emails I sent to Mr. Wortham was to put this before the Salary Commission, since they really determine our benefits. I don't know how that reflects on the state policy regarding PERS. It sounds like this is probably something you want to have in, as a council discussion, but I think the final decision really, in my opinion, should rest with the Salary Commission in terms of benefit.
It actually isn't a requirement for the Salary Commission to weigh in on whether or not councils individually decide that they want to enroll in PERS.
Okay.
We also thought initially that it would be considered to be a benefit, but upon further investigation, it turns out that's not the case. So it would be entirely voluntary if you wanted to send this to the Salary Commission for their input.
Okay. Thank you for the enlightenment. I didn't know what the scope of their responsibilities. I thought it would be for all benefits that apply to elected officials.
We did too.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for looking into this.
Staff at table.
to answer Councilmember Scarborough's question, you'd want to be careful about, and you'd want to know how many hours you're being attributed to for your PERS for each month. If you're already drawing PERS, there is a limitation as to up to how many hours you can work in a PERS-eligible position before it starts to affect your retirement benefit, and the hours are not really all that high. I don't know if you were PERS 1 or PERS 2, that makes a difference as well, so you'd really want to talk to Department of Retirement Systems if you're thinking about having PERS paid for your council stipend.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilmember, that is weird. Councilmember Camp. Councilmember Camp.
I just want to point out, one of the things when I was talking to the HR director at the health district, which initiated this whole thing, the salary limits also were related, and as far as I could tell, we are $5 below the half FTE credit, or however that works. So we're only falling into the quarter hour, or quarter FTE.
Go ahead.
I didn't know if that was impactive of my understanding is that it wouldn't have been a very large I don't know how it works. It's like FTEs or something, for 25%.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Ms. Hassard?
I'm wondering.
So basically the way PERS works is that you get service credits each month based on number of hours you are attributed to working in that month. To get a full service credit, you need to clock in, I want to say it's like 130 hours. Don't quote me on that one. It is a much higher threshold than what you guys are doing now. So really I think what your HR director was getting at is a cost-benefit type issue. percentages that you pay don't change regardless. So I forget what it is for the employee portion because it's just taken automatically out of my check. I don't think about it. I think about the amount that we pay for the employer portion, of course, because, you know, as we put together budgets, the amount that we would have to pay as a city for the employer portion is 12.83% on the amount that we give you each month. So really then the question for each of you individually is, what we can look it up and tell you, as Ms. Knight mentioned, and be able to tell each of you what it would look like each month as to what would come out of your check. Is it worth the maybe quarter, you know, service credit you would get each month, and would that really make a difference if you're not in the PERS system already in some other way? So, my guess is that if you're not already in the PERS system, this is not really going to be a benefit for you for the money it's going to cost you. But for those that may be in the PERS system, who's to say? If you're already getting a full service credit for the month, it's not going to add anything to it. So.
But I'm just thinking in terms of
the arrears. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. Okay, and it sounds like we need more discussions or more information. I'm sorry. I'll state the report without my agreement. It just sounds like we need more information, and that's good. I appreciate you, the staff and everyone looking into this. I was curious about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford?
Thank you. Yeah, I would be interested in hearing more about it, what the options are. Thanks.
Okay. So did we land on this going to the salary commission? It sounds like the salary commission doesn't have authority over benefits, correct?
Not this benefit.
Okay. So shall we bring this back to council then for a conversation in the next few weeks then? Anybody? Okay, I'm saying yes. Let's go ahead and put it on an extended agenda item then to come back with some more information and for council to consider.
Sounds good.
All right. We're going to go ahead. Anything further, Ms. Knight?
Just a quick update on the Snoqualmie Valley Transit. We got numbers back, and we served 50 customers last month, which is not bad for the first month in service, and 29 customers in the first week in September. So the word is starting to get out that the service is available. That's it.
Thank you. And we did meet with our lobbyist last week, the government affairs. Would you like to go ahead and give an update on that?
Sure. So we sat down with Sarah Davenport-Smith, who you hired to provide coalition work for US 2 and SR 522, kind of bringing together the group of business owners and community members in order to support widening SR 522 between Monroe and Woodinville. And then we also met with Al Aldrich and AJ Dotzhauer from Strategies 360 and really put together, I think, what a really strong plan in order to get the group back together again in mid-October and then really do kind of a full court press on our legislators coming in November and December leading into the legislative session. So I think we have a really good strategy in place in order to at least move this forward in the legislators' overall agenda and hopefully in their transportation and capital budgets as well. So we'll keep you informed as we're moving along.
Anything else you wanted to talk about on the legislative strategy?
Yeah, no, it was a really good meeting, really productive, just talked a lot about strategy and planning and whatnot. The following evening then, somebody from Economic Alliance then ended up talking with me about the City of Monroe's legislative agenda, so I was, I think the term is buttonholed. Somebody came and spoke with me after a meeting, and so we talked a little bit about some of the things on the city's at least draft legislative agenda relative to annexations 522 and some of the other things that are on there. So I forgot to inform you of that, but so I think that's all that I have. Do you have anything further?
I don't. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and move then into discussion items. We're going to move into discussion item number one. This is AB 18195, Monroe Police Department Proactive Enforcement. Sergeant Ryan.
I think I know where you're laughing.
Uh-huh. I need to push that button on, yes. Okay, that's podium. And boom, you're on.
Yeah, not to be confused with Interim Deputy Chief Ryan Irving. I am Sergeant Paul Ryan, and currently I have a few hats, one of which is supervising our PROACT unit at the police department, and thanks for the opportunity to share about what we do for the city here. I'll start with, it's actually unique that I'm here tonight because two of the things that I was going to share, one was a recent case that we had involving victims who were parked at the YMCA, and the second is that our PROACT team takes great advantage of our canine unit, and to be here tonight and to hear about the good things that happen at this meeting, especially with Rotary and with YMCA in this community, are incredibly heartwarming. So I do want to speak a little bit about the history of the PROACT unit. So we started in January of 2011, and I'm actually quite new to it. I've been supervising the unit for 9 months, and my predecessor is Interim Deputy Chief Ryan Irving, and I can say that my transition in this role has been very smooth, and that's a result of the positive culture that he instilled in the unit many years ago. The two officers that are assigned have been in the unit for 6-7 years respectively, so there's a lot of stability. I would like to think that they're subject matter experts in a number of the things that they do. Officer Nate Erdman was before the council a week or so ago with his canine. He's also been awarded the Distinguished Service Award a few occasions before council, and so is Officer Scott Cornish. So we have a team that I like to think is professional, competent, and ready to serve. So some of our day-to-day duties include being proactive in our parking lots within the city and within our business districts. We've made good connections with loss prevention officers at Walmart, Fred Meyer, and Lowe's. We participate in our monthly organized retail theft meetings with loss prevention officers across the city. We're constantly being tasked with our Craigslist, OfferUp, Facebook Marketplace theft cases that are occurring within the city. In fact, today, both officers were down in Linwood, and they successfully identified a stolen battery pack that was taken in a theft at the Fred Meyer construction project that's going on. So our jurisdiction really has no boundaries as long as we can say that it touches and affects our city, our citizens, people who travel through. We will do what we can to arrest those responsible. I want to touch on vehicle prowls, burglaries, and car thefts. So I went back at least a year or two, and I did see that vehicle prowls or burglaries are trending up for the moment, but not significantly. Vehicle prowls are basically sitting tight, and burglaries are trending up, vehicle prowls are trending the same, and vehicle thefts are trending down. And I want to touch on prowls because it really speaks to the success of our unit. Within the last 2 years, I think it was in July of this year, we had 11 vehicle prowls, which was a high for us over the last 2 years. And a number of those were coming from the YMCA. And so what we do, we have cold vehicles, which means they don't have markings or lights on them, and the officers are able to surveil with a little bit more effort than maybe a patrol officer in a marked unit. And what they were able to do is observe suspicious activity in the YMCA parking lot. It was a repeat offender who had broken into vehicles there before. They followed him to another fitness center within the city, observed him enter a vehicle, and that case led to an arrest. And so we are looking at the trends month to month for those property crimes in the city, and when we see a significant increase, we're deploying our resources to try to mitigate or reduce that specific property crime. So that's that. I want to touch a little bit on seizure and forfeiture. In a given year, we are averaging quite a few seizures of vehicles and currency that are related to drugs or felony crime seizures. And we've actually been pretty productive the last couple of years in seizing currency in vehicles. I think it was last year that we seized over $25,000 in cash, and some of that cash could be attributed to vehicles that we seized and then subsequently sold. And that money's earmarked for specific areas with the police department. We've used it for training our personnel, sending our personnel to conferences for career development. We've used it for equipment. Our SWAT team has been a benefit of some of this money. They perform search warrants at some of our drug sites. I think one of the more notorious in our community was on South Lewis Street, a drug house that many people are familiar with. So these are just kind of touching on a little bit of what we do as a team. I think as a council, you're probably asked by your citizens most frequently about a house or individuals that people are familiar with and wondering if our police department is looking at that. And I would say this, we can always improve our communication. And one of the things that I'm working on is when we've identified a drug house, proactively communicating with the neighbors in that area so that they know that we aren't ignoring it. Because when we have two cold cars in the area, and mine may be a third, I think sometimes people don't realize the police department is investigating these homes and these houses. So we're doing our best to reach out to homeowners associations and the neighbors to these affected properties. And then at the beginning I mentioned I have a couple different hats at the moment, and one of my other responsibilities right now is homeless outreach with our embedded social worker, Elisa Delgado, and supervising our community service officer, Gabriela Escalante. And what I've realized is that what we're doing in the PROAC unit, in the CSO unit, and in homeless outreach is we're really touching all the same people and individuals, but with different strategies and tactics. So what we've been able to accomplish is working collaboratively with, especially with our embedded social worker, to reach out to these folks who are opiate addicted, try to give them the resources they need to fix their current problem that they may be in. So I can leave it at that. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you guys have any. Any questions? Councilmember Camp?
Thank you.
Let me turn off the podium. And Councilmember Camp. There we go. That is funny.
Thank you for calling on
me. All right, Councilmember Camp. Councilmember Hanford, cue yourself back up. There you go. Thank you.
First off, thank you. It sounds like you're doing a great job. I have two questions. The first one is, so if you are investigating a drug house and you're unmarked cars and the whole bit, and then I get a question from somebody, when are they going to do something about some house? How do they contact you or your group to find out so that they can get the information? I know you don't want to give away too much, like, yeah, we have six cars and 20 guys out there, but what can the population do to find out that something is being done? Who would they contact?
That's a good question, and I would say I
think one of the areas we can improve in law enforcement is the people that are occupying these homes know that the police are investigating them. There's a time and place for secrecy, and but like you mentioned, there's certain things we can disclose and things that we can't. I'm not interested in stating a date, a time that we're out there, the extent of the investigation we're looking into, but I think having that conversation with anyone that would come to you inquiring what are the police doing, I think it's our duty to tell them that we're investigating it. And we ask for patience. And then the follow-up is just as important. So when an arrest is made, letting those folks know the arrest has been made, an individual was booked into the jail, and then this is what you can expect. And I think, again, another weakness is sometimes we feel that incarceration is a lasting process, but it's not. And to explain to folks in the community that people do get out of jail for various lawful reasons, and they very well may re-engage in the same behavior that they were in, even though we have a criminal investigation that occurred. Hope that answers your question.
For the most part. And then the document you have above your head, it says during surveillance, a PROAC spotted a stolen vehicle and ended up with three vehicles.
That's my fault.
I'm sorry.
I will take responsibility. If you could expand on the parking lot where three were arrested and two were booked.
Walmart?
Yes.
Yeah. So this was a very good investigation, a good example of what we do as a team. In a given day, we're constantly driving through various parking lots in town. In this case, Officer Erdman had been investigating a young woman for identity theft for many months, and we'd been on the lookout for her. And it just so happened on this particular day, he saw a suspicious vehicle. And this was less than a month ago, a suspicious vehicle in the Walmart parking lot with a vehicle license on it. It was a temporary vehicle license belonging to a car dealer, so it hadn't quite gotten fully licensed. And through his investigation via his computer, he figured out this was a stolen car. So I ended up going up there to assist him, and we utilized two of our marked units. Long story short, when we arrested the occupants of the car, there was about a ping pong sized ball of crystal meth and another ping pong sized ball of heroin just sitting on the front passenger seat of the vehicle. Usually it's a little more hidden than that. It's not as much of a gimme. We didn't quite need a narcotics dog that day. I think my eyes worked good enough. And then the gentleman that was sitting in that seat that we've attributed the drugs to had a felony warrant for his arrest for escape community custody at the Department of Corrections. The female also was wanted by Officer Erdman for previous identity theft charges. And what he come to find out ultimately is that they purchased this vehicle with false IDs, and the case goes on and on and on. Probably, I should have touched on this earlier, but we get excited when we find guns and we seize them from the hands of convicted felons. And in this case, we accomplished that. There was a firearm, there was a 380 in the trunk of the vehicle. And we're doing some investigation on that to see that it might have been attributed to a potential violent crime within Snohomish County. So our cases tend to continue and have legs. And this is a good example of one. So,
thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Thank you, Sergeant Wren, and your team. Appreciate all the work that you do. It's great to get a report.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. Sergeant Ryan, thank you very much. All right, next item on the agenda this evening is discussion item number two. This is AB 18196, General Fund 6-Year Financial Forecast with Ms. Hassert.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in your packet is an agenda bill sheet that was originally meant to be presented to you back in, I believe it was July. My apologies for having missed that meeting. I had some family issues that came up that evening, so I couldn't be here. For those that are eagle-eyed and compared the agenda cover sheet to what was presented back in July, there has been a few changes that were made, nothing of significance. So basically, I'm not going to sit here and read the whole cover to you, but there were a couple of things that I did want to emphasize whenever you talk about six-year projections, and especially for general funds. Six-year projections are numbers that are estimates, and they are meant to be used in a broad, very high-level policy discussion sense. As we know, the further out you go, the more fuzzy the numbers get. And they're only as good as the estimates that we are making. So if you remember back in January, we had a discussion with council where we talked about what kind of growth factors we wanted to use when we started doing these long-range projections. We want to be conservative in our numbers, but we don't want to be so conservative that we end up with a pile of money sitting in the bank after 5-6 years, because then that means there might be a lot of lost opportunities we didn't take advantage of. So again, keep in mind when we start looking at the actual, you know, projections over the 6-year period, these are numbers that are meant to foster discussion. It does not mean that these are set in stone and that's where we're going to end up going. You'll see that theme repeated quite a bit in the cover sheet because I personally don't think that we can say that enough. The other thing that I want to point out is just because there's red in the out years does not mean we have no money.
What that means is that if we continue down this same road and we don't make adjustments in years 2 and 3, then we could end up with no money. Rarely does that happen. I mean, quite frankly, in doing an annual budget process, we make adjustments every time we adopt a new budget. And these numbers were also done back in July before we started getting into the heart of the budget season. These numbers will be updated and be part of what we present to you next week in the mayor's proposed budget. So in essence, all these numbers can get thrown out at that point. But again, because they're used for policy discussion, they can still be presented tonight to be discussed. Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. And if there's any questions, just on kind of those broad parameters.
Okay. Senator Cheney.
Okay.
Thank you.
So basically then what we did is we took what we had for the 2018 amended budget, and that's what we used as our starting point as we started looking at what the numbers could look like going forward. So things like property property taxes, the only growth that we factored in for property taxes in the first scenario, there were four different scenarios that were presented as part of this agenda bill. The first scenario is just a real basic vanilla projection. We looked at it from more broad strokes, not at the line item level like we do when we put together the operating budget every year. So in looking at taxes, with property taxes, the only growth factor that we put in there is any new taxes we would realize from new construction each year. The city has a tradition of not utilizing its allowed 1% increase, and so we wanted to continue to show that as we projected out property taxes. As you guys learned a couple of study sessions ago, if assessed values go up, it actually has an inverse relationship to how much the rate per thousand is that we would collect. It would keep the amount of property taxes we collect at the same level every year, regardless of what happens to assessed values. So again, the only growth that we were projecting then came from any new construction. And as far as new construction went, we were using a conservative $20 million per year to put money in there for the out years. With that, any sales taxes, utility taxes, things of that nature, we used the conservative 1.26% growth for new population. If there's more people that come in to town, they're going to ideally spend more money in town. That's kind of the factor that we had all had a consensus on back in January. So long and short of it is what you see there in the top two rows, or the second, it's row number 7, the ongoing revenues, that's all the various revenues that go into what comes into the general fund. It's taxes, it's our charges for services, the bulk of which are building permit fees. The other thing we did in the out years is we slowed down with the development that we are seeing in town. Housing markets are starting to cool. We're not expecting to have as many new housing starts over the next 5 years. We tried to reflect that in those numbers. The other thing we also tried to reflect out there is our construction sales taxes. As we know this year with the Park Place, with what's going on with school construction, now that the schools are pretty much complete, the sales tax we would get on the construction of that is going to go away. That's why we recognize construction sales tax as one-time revenue. So we tried to take that into account as well. And as far as expenses go, those tend to be, since the bulk of our expenses do tend to be salaries and benefits, again, we came up with factors that were agreed upon by consensus back in January, which was a 5% growth each year in salaries and a 10% growth in benefits. We know some years it can be higher, some years it can be lower. Again, these numbers are meant just to foster discussion. But that's pretty much what we used for the bulk of our expenses going forward. CPI, we used an average of 3% each year. And so that's what you're looking at there to then see the difference in row 12 of our revenues over expenditures. We did try to recognize, as I mentioned, I got ahead of myself a little bit there with the one-time revenues. That, again, you're looking at sales taxes. The one-time expenses, there was an exhibit that was attached to this where we talked about back in January what we call the non-base services that we offer. They are nice services to have. They add to our quality of life. But let's be honest, if we were in a period of cutbacks in recession, those are the things that you would be able to cut first before you had to start looking at cutting positions. Things like the YMCA contract, the Monroe Duval connector, those types of things that, yes, in good times, it definitely is a service to provide for our citizens. It is definitely adds to our quality of life. But is that really a base service for the city? That was a discussion that we had had with the Finance Committee as well as back in January with the full board. So we tried to isolate that down below. And so what you're looking at then is what does that do to our ending fund balance? Well, as you can see, for 2018, if all things come in as expected with the budget, we'd end the year with $2.9 million. Our reserve is 17% of our ongoing expenditures. That's the $2.365 million that you see in column C, row 21. That means that, you know, we'd have over $500,000 above what we would need to meet all our reserve targets. That beginning fund balance then carries into the next year, and so on and so on, that in this case, you don't start seeing red really in that ending fund balance until the end of year three. Traditionally, that's about where you see it, and that's about where we want to see it. Again, it gets back to if you were to try and build your budget every year so that you're always in the black in the out years, you're sitting on a lot of cash every year, but then you could be missing opportunities. I actually had a great analogy given to me that I'd never used before that I want to steal. Thank you, Councilmember Camp. It's like having a car with a full tank of gas. If you're driving down the road and you're thinking, okay, at some point I'm going to run out of gas, right? You know you're going to run out of gas after 500, 600 miles, depending on how economical the car is. You know, at some point, you're going to turn off and go fill up the tank, right? That's the adjustments I talk about making. If you just keep driving and you never stop, at some point, you're going to putter to a stop because you have no more gas. If you target it that you're always going to have that full tank of gas, you don't go anywhere, right? So again, it gets back to having a long-term projection like this is good to talk about where are you headed, maybe keep us on track and what adjustments we have to make so we can keep that red in the third year, every year when we roll this over and add a new year. But just because we have red is not necessarily a bad thing. So that's scenario number one. As you know, we've been talking about, and we're going to be talking about here shortly after I'm done gabbing, six-year strategic plan. You know, we have a lot of capital items out there that we're targeting. A lot of that is paid out of other funds, but some of it requires matches or assistance from the general fund. There are things out in the six-year capital plan that we've identified that would have general fund impacts. So scenario number two, we tried to factor that into the long-range projections so that we can see where the red starts happening. And in this case, you can see that the red actually then starts happening a little bit more in year two, 2019. This is when you want to start talking about, are those things realistic? Or are we putting them in the right places instead of trying to do some of this in year two, maybe try and do them in year four? This is where a model like this can start to become the tool that it should be for policy discussion. Now, in this case with scenario two, we plugged in the expenditures, but what we didn't include was any potential offsetting revenues with regards to the strategic plan. Scenario three puts money into the budget. It carries on from scenario two with the impacts of the six-year strategic plan, but then also includes the Economic Development Advisory Board recommendations. what makes scenario three different from scenario two also, because you notice it pushed the red out again into the third year, is that part of the recommendations from the EDAB board was revenues to offset some of the costs, more specifically to use some bank property tax capacity. So that was factored in, not only $200,000 from bank capacity, but also a utility tax on the sewer utility and using $200,000 of that tax towards some of the costs for those recommendations from the EDAP. So you can see where infusing that $400,000 into the scenario pushes your red out again. So again, that becomes a policy discussion for council. Scenario four, this is new, that was not included back in January. I threw this out there just because I know the poor Finance and Human Resources Committee is probably tired of hearing me talk about it, but we do have something called a 2020 North Kelsey debt payment due to the tune of about $2.9 million. The reality is, if you're going to be truly conservative, worst case scenario is we sell none of that property. We got to come up with $2.9 million to make that debt payment. So I actually factored in half of that for years 2019 and 2020 as a transfer to be able to make that payment, and you can see all kinds of red happening after that. Is that realistic? I would hope not, because we got to have cash somewhere to be able to make that, but then this would then foster that discussion about where would that money come from. Again, the caveat I would give you is these were numbers that were projected back in July. These numbers now have all changed because now we have projections for 2018. And as expected, because we are conservative by nature, revenues are projected to come in a little higher than what was budgeted. Expenses are going to be less than what was budgeted. So the beginning fund balance that we are projecting for 2019 will be higher than that 2.918. So right away, the new six-year projection, as we roll it over to go from 2019 through 2024, will reset all the numbers. Again, that I will be working on that over the next couple of days, so that will be part of the budget document that will be distributed next Tuesday, and it will be interesting to see where the red ends up landing then with all the proposals that the mayor is going to be making. With that, a very truncated explanation on what's presented before you, a lot to digest, but I'm here to answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions from council members? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Hassard. Ms. Knight, we're now moving on to discussion item number three. This is AB 18-197, six-year strategic plan. Ms. Knight.
Hey, thank you so much, Mayor and Council. This issue actually came to you back in March, and it has been part of the city's overall effort in order to identify those things that we need to be working on, not just in the current year, but in the upcoming years as well. So what we're trying to do with the presentation that Ms. Hassard gave plus this presentation is really begin to marry together the finances with the strategic plan. So if you take a look at the attachment that is on, it says attachment one, page
44.
It's actually shown up on the screen. What this shows then is the investments that are prioritized over the next 6 years. And if you take a look at those investments, you can see for the most part, it's really capital project heavy, meaning those are the things that are really the big expenses that the city's planning to take on over the coming 6 years. And what we're trying to do again is to ensure that what the council wants to do as far as its strategic investments is supported then by the six-year financial forecast. When we talked about these projects, there were a couple of projects that council wanted to include on the list that previously weren't there. So you can see that those are the projects that are now underlined, and that includes the Regional Transportation Improvement District, or RTID. That's one of the items that could be a potential funding source for the SR 522 improvements. And then also moving on to implement the Economic Development Advisory Board recommendations and switching out the implementing the ERP or Enterprise Resource Program platform. Is that what ERP, is that the P stands for? That's the big picture IT investment that we were going to make. Instead, we've swapped that out for an IT strategic plan. So actually coming in and taking a look at what are our IT systems, how are we doing with our graphic interface system, our GIS program, how are we doing with our building permit software, and how is that then working together with our financial software package. So we want to take a big picture, global look before we come back to you with some recommendations in the outer years. We did cross off the list then a marketing plan implemented in 2020, and again swap that out for implementing the IT strategic plan. And then at the request of Councilmember Scarborough, we added in the train station and parallel tracks in 2021. So those are the changes that have been made to the strategic plan since you last saw it. And the items that you see listed in the 2019 section are items that are being included then in the mayor's proposed budget for next year. So again, we're trying to align the budget projections, the actual budget investments that we're making in the upcoming years with the mayor's recommended budget. So I'm just here to answer any questions about how the strategic plan is looking for council at this point and whether or not there are any additions or subtractions that you would want to recommend that we make at this time. It's not the last time you're going to see this, because we intend to bring it back to you again next January or February when you have then your kind of kickoff meeting for your planning and strategic thinking for 2019 and the years beyond that as well. So this is a living document, and we're going to bring it to you a couple times a year.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. Councilmember Scarborough.
Is the Turning Place Phase 3 Oak Street?
Yes.
Okay.
Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough?
That's it.
Okay. Somebody else, did anybody else chime in? So your light's not working. Was that Ms. Hassert?
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble's not here. All right, Ms. Assert.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One of the things that I just wanted to point out is that with the six-year strategic plan is going to work hand in hand with the six-year general fund revenue or projections, because again, with the way these are laid out, one of the things I try to do then is identify what items on here would have general fund impact and make sure to incorporate that into that six-year projection so you can see what it does to the red, so to speak, and when that red would show up as to whether these things made sense with how they're laid out. So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hassert. Ms. Knight?
I don't have anything further.
All right. Well, I decided to add you to the queue there. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Okay. That takes care of our third discussion item. Executive session. I have a five-hour executive session, but I'm just kidding. We have nothing further this evening, so unless there's something else that somebody has. Councilmember Rasmussen?
There's nothing else, so I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great evening. Have a safe trip to D.C. For those of you heading out. And thank you.
Becky and I took a drive around town today looking to see where the housing market was at.